If you think that resting on the Sabbath is an old-fashioned Jewish law, well, you need to think again. Here's Melissa Spolstra.
Jesus did not take away the concept of rest. He did fulfill the Sabbath. It is not a mandated law that it has to look a certain way, but he certainly did not come and obliterate the concept that we were created to rest.
We're going to talk about what church is for and what Sabbath is for on this edition of Family Life This Week. Welcome to Family Life This Week. I'm Michelle Hill. You know, last week we talked about Pastor Appreciation Month because October is Pastor Appreciation Month. And well, this week I wanted to talk about church and some of the reasons why we go to church. Why do you go to church?
The main reason I go to church is because I love the Lord, but I also enjoy the worship and praise and getting together with the other saints.
I go to church because that's where I'm fed, where I fellowship, and where I learn to grow closer to God.
I'm involved in several families' lives in my own church and serving. It's not about what I can receive from the message, but what I can do to help impart that to others and help them in their journey with Christ.
You know, church really isn't about you. It's about God. In fact, all of life is about the one who made us because we are His. And on Sundays, we learn about Him. We glorify Him and we rest in Him. And I want us to take a look at learning about Him today. Where better to do that than to open His Word? A while back on Family Life Today, Dennis Rainey shared a list of what the Bible is about. And his list goes like this. The Bible tells us who God is and what He's like, what pleases God, and how we should relate and respond to God. It explains God's love for us. The Bible shows us the way to have a relationship with God, and it teaches us how to live. And at the right time, it instructs us on how to die. The Bible gives our soul God's nutrients for spiritual growth, and it convicts us of wrong choices, wrong attitudes, wrong perspective. The Bible gives us the standard for moral judgment, and it replaces our wishbone with a backbone by giving us moral convictions. The Bible is the truth, the unchanging truth, the mighty truth, God's truth for us. You know, without God's power in our lives, we are like a ship out to sea on a stormy night. Because the Bible is our navigational tool in this life. And that kind of reminds me of a conversation that Bob Lapine and Dennis Rainey had not so long ago that illustrates this idea of biblical authority. Here's Dennis.
A young Army pilot by the name of Carl Crane got caught in the clouds about 8,000 feet above Detroit while he was trying to fly a congressman's son back to Washington, D.C., and he was flying a biplane. Now, I want to read what he said. In a short time, I was losing altitude, completely out of control. I couldn't fly the airplane at all. It had gotten into a spiral dive, and about halfway down, I looked around at the boy behind me, and he was enjoying the flight to no end. He was shaking his hands and grinning, and I was slowly dying because I knew we were about to crash. Crane did not know which wing was up or down, let alone by how much. He goes on, finally it got down under 1,000 feet and I said, well, here we go. I'm going to look at this boy one more time. And as I turned around to look at him, a sign went by my wing. It said, Statler Hotel. I had just missed the top of the Statler Hotel in Detroit. In all the mist and rain, I could see the buildings and the streets. I righted the plane and flew down the street and got over the Detroit River and flew about 10 feet high all the way back to Toledo, shaking all the way. Well, what the scriptures are? The scriptures are those points of perspective, those anchor points that tell us this is right side up. They explain to us why we behave the way we behave, why we make sinful, selfish choices, and what we can do about them. And if we will but obey them, and follow the scriptures like that pilot followed the river, we can have a safe landing. Mm-hmm. It may be bumpy. There may be some jostling about that takes place during the flight, but we're going to get home safely.
And it's the Bible that helps us get home safely because it teaches us about God. You know, on Sundays and every day, we need God's Word to guide us and to teach us. And you know, at church, we should also be worshiping God. We should be getting caught up in who He is and all that He has done. We need to behold Him. John Piper, for many years, was pastor at Bethlehem Baptist Church in Minneapolis, Minnesota. He is a well-known author and speaker. And a while back, John Piper stopped by Family Life, and he shared with our staff how Christ knew we needed to know Him, to really know Him. And Pastor Piper spoke to us out of the book of John, the place where Jesus is praying to God the night before His crucifixion. And he said these words, "Father, I desire that they also, whom You have given Me, may be with Me where I am, to see My glory that You have given Me because You loved Me before the foundation of the world." But Pastor Piper also talked about how we can help those around us to properly understand and grasp the awe of God. Here's John Piper.
What is the most loving prayer request that Christ could make for you? Answer, "Father, let them see My glory." And if that's the most loving request He could make, then that He be glorious is essential to love. That He be displayed as glorious is essential to an act of love. Because if we didn't have Him to look at, if He were somehow clouded, not on display, we would be the losers. Okay, I want to think about relating this to family. So how do we help enthrall our wives and husbands? Me, how do I help Noel be enthralled with Christ? And how do I help my daughter, Talitha, be enthralled with Christ? That's my goal. My little girl is a sinner, and she is dead in trespasses and sins unless she's born again. And I don't know yet whether she's born again at 8 years old. I see some evidences, but I see evidence to the contrary. And so my prayer is that God would awaken her from the dead and incline her heart to Christ. Incline us to Your Word, O God. Open our eyes to see wonderful things out of Your law. Unite our hearts to fear Your name. Satisfy us in the morning with Your steadfast love. Those four prayers, I-O-U-S. I pray those for myself every day, and I pray them for my little girl. Only a supernatural work can make her be happy in God more than me and her mother. That's what conversion will mean, and that is highly unnatural, and therefore a miracle, and therefore to be prayed for. With regard to speaking, oh my, the tongue. Oh, the power of the tongue in marriage and child rearing. James, the power of the tongue for evil and the power of the tongue for good. Oh my, let me just give you a few bullets here of the tongue. Maybe I'll leave the show for later. Pray, speak, show. Exult around your wife, your spouse, and your children spontaneously in all the glories and gifts of Christ. How few homes have exulting parents. You know what exult means? Isn't it a beautiful day, Talitha? God gave us a beautiful day. So exult in the gifts of God and the glories of God. Now, you got to pray like crazy to be that kind of person. This is not artificial. I asked Noel this morning, what's the opposite of flattery? Because I think a lot of parents use flattery to make their kids feel loved. I mean, the word flattery exists in the English language because there's this reality that's bad. It's a use of language and compliment that's bad. There's a bad way to compliment people. It's called flattery. What's the opposite? There's several opposites, as Noel pointed out this morning. But the one I'm most interested in is, I think the opposite of flattery is spontaneous enjoyment of everything good you see in your child. Makes her first little tree round with stick at the bottom. That's beautiful. Now, I could either be a manipulative self-esteem builder at this point, thinking, okay, now, let's see. Good parenting involves making her feel like a good artist. And this is really not good art, but I will do what parents are supposed to do and make her feel good about her lousy art. Now, that would be flattery or manipulative, artificial use of language to build a feeling into a child. Wouldn't it be better if you were the kind of person who looked at that and said, awesome, I feel so happy about this tree. Now, you wouldn't have to use any words like, you're a great artist, which would be a lie. You don't have to use that because she feels your joy. That's what we need to be. We need to be people who are so free from ourselves and so spontaneously delighting in every good and perfect gift from the Father that every little thing she does that has any speck of virtue in it at all causes us to brim with gladness. She'll feel that. Now, in her sinful nature, she might take it to puff up her pride. But if God grants her a new nature, she will simply know, my daddy delights in all that is right and good, so I should delight in all that's right and good, and God is ultimately right and good. So exulting is a fixed routine. It is a use of the mouth. It is full of blessing. And I believe it is pointing her every night to a God who never sleeps and will take care of her when daddy's gone.
We serve a God who never sleeps. Such a great reminder. You know, John Piper is teaching us how to lead by example. And when we are showing others how to do it, we are actually doing it. So when you are looking for God in all of those details and showing others God in those details, you are praising Him. And the more we praise Him, the more we want to praise Him. And as John said, delighting in all that is right and good, well, God is ultimately right and good. So we have Sabbath and we have church for studying God's word and glorifying God and also for rest. Rest any day of the week is hard to do. What does rest on a Sabbath or rest on a Sunday mean, especially when you have busy teenagers? Let's hear one perspective on that from Melissa Spolstra. Melissa is a pastor's wife. She's a busy mom of four. She's a speaker, Bible study author, and passionate keeper of the fourth commandment. Remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Sundays, church days, are our Sabbath. Here's Melissa.
So we decided many years ago to say, what would it look like for us to have a media-free day on Sundays? To say, no phones, no iPods. And this happened for me in one of those moments at home where I noticed it was really quiet. And I looked up over the top of my laptop and I saw two kids on devices. I saw my husband on his laptop and realized the other two kids were downstairs watching TV. It wasn't one of those sweet mama moments where you're cuddling with your kids or you've just finished reading a story. It was one of those, what are we all doing? We're all in the same house and yet we're not connected.
Are you a mean mom?
It is my kids' least favorite part of this whole spiritual rhythm. I mean, we are the meanest parents in the world because we still do it. And did I mention my daughters were 16? So the other day, they came home from church. And of course, they don't have their phones. And they can barely survive without them. Because they could, the fear of missing something. Right, they could be missing something. Someone might be trying to get a hold of them. They're so used to being constantly notified. Notifications, notifications, notifications. And they almost don't know what to do in their own skin without that kind of a communication. So Sarah, my daughter, says to me, what are we supposed to do? I'm bored. I don't know what to do. And we're laying around on the couches in the living room. And I said, well, Sarah, why don't you tell us a story? And she said, once upon a time, there were two really mean parents who took away their kids' phones for no reason at all. And we all laughed. And you know what happened? We all fell asleep on those couches. And I woke up before everyone else, and I looked out my sleeping children, because they're at their best, right? We love to watch our kids sleep, you know? They're so beautiful, and we cherish them. And I thought, there's a reason that we're unplugging, because we're tired. We run so hard. And our Creator God knows us, and He made us and designed us for rest. I mean, if He really wanted to get the point across, He could put it in the days of creation. Maybe He could put it in the Ten Commandments. Maybe He could talk about it throughout the prophets if He thought it was important.
Oh, wait.
And then where's that passage about Jesus being in a hurry? You know that one verse about, oh, wait.
Yeah, that's not in
there,
is it?
There's not one either. Jesus did not take away the concept of rest. He did fulfill the Sabbath. It is not a mandated law that it has to look a certain way. But He certainly did not come and obliterate the concept that we were created to rest.
We were created to rest. Because remember, at creation, God rested on the seventh day. And our fourth commandment is, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy. Hey, we need to take a break, but when we come back, I am going to talk with Hannah Anderson, who is also a pastor's wife, and talk to her about what Sundays, what Sabbath looks like in their home. Stay tuned.
Want to hear something sobering? Kids are not always invested in the success of their parents' remarriage.
For Family Life Blended, here's Ron Deal.
Children in biological families are naturally invested in their mom and dad and their happiness, right? But children in blended families are primarily invested in their relationship with their parent, which sometimes is in direct competition to their parents' marriage. It's really important that you understand this. I mean, for example, when your anniversary rolls around, go ahead and celebrate. You should. Guilt-free, celebrate. Just don't expect the kids to join you, at least not in the early years. But remember, with time and patience, they just might. I'm Ron Deal.
To find out more, visit FamilyLifeBlended.com.
The reality of living in a blended or step family can be tough.
I believed at 27, because I was divorced, that I was no longer qualified to do anything in God's name.
That's why there's the Family Life Blended podcast.
My husband will say, you know, there are some good parts about being a stepmom. I'm like, I know there are. It's a blessing, but it's also very hard.
The Family Life Blended podcast is part of the Family Life Podcast Network, and it's hosted by Ron Deal, an expert on blended families.
We're always working on our marriages because God is always using our marriage to work on us.
The Family Life Blended podcast brings together real, honest conversations about the complexities facing blended families.
We have to learn how to put on love in the midst of chaos.
Parent-teacher conferences and sporting events and holidays. It was just messy.
We call that around here complexity.
You can find the Family Life Blended podcast with Ron Deal wherever you get your podcasts, or go to familylife.com/podcasts.
Welcome back to Family Life This Week. Today we've been talking about what our Sabbath and our Sundays should look like, and really why we go to church. We've tackled knowing just what the Bible is and why we need to know it. Also, how to glorify God. What does that look like? How does that play out in our families? And we talked about my favorite thing, resting, just taking a break. But I know there's a lot more that we could be talking about what a Sunday is for. But to help us consider Sundays from a pastor's wife standpoint, I decided to call my friend Hannah Anderson. And Hannah is a pastor's wife, a mom. She's the author of several books. She's a writer of articles for various blogs and publications, and she is an awesome thinker. Hannah, welcome to Family Life This Week.
Hi, Michelle. It's so good to be with you.
I am so excited to talk with you. I
You know, I'm just, as we've been talking today about the Sabbath and what Sundays look like, what comes to mind for you when you think of a Sabbath?
Well, it's not Sunday.
I bet not, because Sundays are a day of work for you, isn't it?
It is, and it's, I guess the best way to describe Sunday in a pastor's home is if you're on Facebook and you see the relationship status options, and one of them is it's complicated. And Sundays for us as a pastor's family best described as hashtag it's complicated. Because at one level, it is a day of worship for us. Mm-hmm. But it also has a lot happening on the back end for us in terms of behind the scenes work. And so Sunday is a day of work for my husband and even for me as a pastor's wife. One of the first things that happens for us as a family is that we're not necessarily together in our experience of Sunday morning. We're all there, you know, in the same place, but we're not riding in the car together down to the church. We're not coming home together. We're not sitting as a family together. And I think that, for me, that may be one of the biggest differences, where in a lot of people's experience, Sunday morning worship or church is really associated as a family time, where you can all be together worshiping God. And for us, it's a little more fragmented. Mm-hmm. We're all there, but it's not a time for us to be together.
So when do you get your day of rest?
Well, my husband and I tend to take Monday off, but with our family, our children are in traditional school setting, so they don't get Monday off. So we don't always have our rest together as a family. We do try to make time for them separately to make sure that they're resting, because I don't think we always think of Sabbath as something that children need, because they have so much energy and we just think, well, they need to be busy, but children need downtime too. And my husband and I tend to take a personal Sabbath on Mondays.
And I've got to admit, coming from my standpoint, when I just see my pastor's wife, I think, oh, okay, you know, she gets the kids ready for church and she comes. And my our pastor's wife actually helps with leading worship. But it adds a complexity layer when you have children.
Yeah, it does. And the same resources that you're using for leading and pastoring are the same resources that you're using for parenting. So it's like this nurturing discipleship component. And my husband and I have talked a lot about that, where sometimes those resources feel depleted because you're using them for parenting, but you're also using them for ministry. And that was something that I did not anticipate. I never expected that.
So how do you guys, I mean, other than getting away, you know, for a weekend or something like that, how do you guys get refreshed? Or do you have someone who's building into you?
Well, we learn pretty quickly on to be okay with boundaries. there are some times like our family and our children just cannot go to everything the church is doing. And while there would be people who would kind of expect us to, we learned that we just had to put those boundaries in place and be okay with them. So we do safeguard some of that. Because we're not doing this work for the approval of men, we can make those choices more before the Lord and say, do our children need to stay home from this event? And if they stay home, then I need to stay home with them. And that's going to have to be okay. Mm-hmm. And some of that, honestly, was kind of forced upon us because our middle child is on the autism spectrum. Mm-hmm. And learning his limits, we learned to embrace them as our family's limits.
We realized
that if God is sovereign and he allowed this for our son's life, that those limits were not limits that we should ignore. And so we had to give attention to them. And that really helped us learn the boundaries of not pushing past the limits to begin with, but also not feeling guilty when you need to take that time. And sometimes with our son, we've just told people, I'm sorry, he's seen too many people today. He cannot be around any more people.
And sometimes that's got to be nice, too. It's then you can escape, too, where it's like, hey, okay, so it's him. It really is him we're caring for. But, you know, it's kind of nice that I get to escape,
too. Well, and I think that's what he's contributed, is that we have realized that we can see his limits so clearly that they have highlighted our own limits. Because then when I do stay home, I think, oh, yeah, I needed that. Now, I wouldn't have done that, you know, if it were left to me and push through and minister and serve. But then once it happens, I think, oh, that was something that I should have given attention to. And his limits forced us to realize that about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have, as far as people pouring into our lives, we have built relationships with other folks in the community that may not be in our church. So we have really close friends that are in another church.
That's good.
And we have good relationships with the other pastors and ministers in the area. So there is that kind of sense of shared understanding, mutual care.
Which helps a lot.
Yeah.
To be able to talk through stuff and for someone to say, I get it. I know exactly what you're going through. Well, Hannah, thank you so much for spending a few minutes with us and just helping us understand, giving us an eye a little bit or a view into the life of a pastor's family. It's invaluable as we appreciate those who serve us every Sunday. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me, Michelle. It's been wonderful to share.
Always good to have Hannah Anderson on Family Life this week. Hey, next week we are going to hear from the next generation, Generation Z. Each new generation has its significant critics, and Generation Z does too. But you know, God is doing some incredible work through a couple of young people who want to reach their generation with the gospel. Jordan Whitmer and Emma Mae Jenkins will join me, and I can guarantee you that it'll be encouraging and inspiring. Hope you can join us for that. Hey, thanks for listening. I want to thank the president of Family Life, David Robbins, along with the co-founder, Dennis Rainey, and our station partners around the country. A big thank you today to Keith Lynch, our engineer. Thanks to our producers, Marcus Holt and Bruce Goff. Justin Adams is our mastering engineer, and Megan Martin is our production coordinator. Our program is a production of Family Life Today, and our mission is to effectively develop godly families who change the world one home at a time. I'm Michelle Hill, inviting you to join us again next time for another edition of Family Life This Week.